This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
How have you been able to keep your skill set fresh?
And Brock Rom.
Where do you see content going in the next year?
I really think it's about being curious about the other side of the coin.
That last voice is Kelly Mosier, who's joining us in episode 6. Kelly is the director of Huddle Studio, where he gets to combine his passions of technology and communication. You might want to pull out a notepad for this one.
3, 2, 1, clap. That was not even close. One more time. 3, 2, 1, clap. Whatever.
You know what? It's funny because when I went back to do the intros, the one that we thought was close sounds the worst. Hey, it's Justin here, and I just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing that track for us here on the Sports Creative Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack, so if you're finding us and aren't part of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com. So one thing I want to start with is just your background and how you got into the industry. And quick story that I don't think I've ever told you. I was telling Brock and Garrett, but my first memory of meeting you was at the College of Journalism, University of Nebraska. Husker Vision holds a meeting to introduce Husker Vision to a bunch of incoming students or students that are interested from the College of Journalism because they hire a ton of students. And it was just after the College World Series where Nebraska played in the College World Series, which was a huge deal for the state. And the video, you showed the recap video that you produced, and that was the moment when I realized this is exactly what I want to do with my career, because it was so well done. And I think you've continued to be, for all three of us, a source of inspiration and someone that we all look up to as far as the types of content that you turn around and produce and continue to drive forward over the years. So I just want to get into, how did you get into this industry, and what's your first memory?
For sure. First of all, I greatly appreciate that. I think one of the things that has kept me in this industry is working with young professionals and watching their careers develop. It's kind of funny. We also obviously know each other from previous lives, but and you three were all in the athletic department at Nebraska at about roughly the same time. But for me, I have a really hard time connecting faces with time periods. You kind of all blend together. And it's hard for me to remember which groups of people know other groups of people within that little community. And that's one of the things that I probably enjoy the most, is being able to connect those people with that broader community. So I want to commend you guys for doing that digitally through this podcast. Helping out with that, with the Creative Slack channel. That's phenomenal to see. That's a huge resource that really helps young creatives. But to your question about how I kind of got into this, it's a little bit of a convoluted story, in that I was never a sports guy growing up. Small town Nebraska is where I was born and raised. On the playgrounds is not where I spent most of my days. I was really more of a music, drama, arts kid growing up, but in small town you do everything. So I played sports too, obviously, not well, but I at least participated and played them. When I got to college, I wanted to continue to pursue music, particularly radio broadcasting, but I pretty quickly realized that radio was a very dramatically changing industry, and the days of having a radio DJ were essentially gone. And, you know, I had a farm background. My parents, you know, were not paying for my college, so I had to find, you know, part-time jobs here and there to keep myself in college. And when I heard about Husker Vision, I was like, sure, I'll apply. It was actually a friend of mine that was also applying at the same time. And from there, once I got into it, I just kind of got hooked on sports, particularly the sports creative production, because it's addicting, especially as my career has developed. It's gotten even more addicting. You're constantly creating content at an ever rapidly changing pace, and you get immediate reaction and feedback to that content. It's very, very rewarding to have a video that runs on a big screen that everybody gets goosebumps from, or to post something on social media that, that goes viral. All those things just keep kind of feeding that beast. And when I got into it, I was an undergrad. And when I graduated from undergrad, I thought about moving more into the documentary space. And I took on an internship to do that with a local public television station we had here. And I really, really enjoyed my time there. But the pace of it was just mind-numbingly slow. I was there for 6 months and never saw a single project finished. And I just, it just drove me nuts. So that, and I, my wife and I had our first child unexpectedly, and just kind of life was happening pretty rapidly. So I got back into sports full time. And from there, it's just been a roller coaster of just trying to stay ahead of the curve, seeing where trends are going, where growth opportunities are at. Husker Vision was the first college-only video board system in the country. So the people that were working at Husker Vision, that had been there for a while when I started, they were all going off and starting big screens at other colleges around the country. But by the time I was getting ready to graduate, that market was starting to get saturated. And most colleges had already started up a big screen production, at least the ones that I would have considered going to. And so it was kind of a process of thinking through, okay, well, what's next? And for me, this was right around the time, this would have been 2007, 2008, right around the time social media was really starting to catch hold. And so I made a pivot, and I was working on a master's degree at the university while working full-time for Husker Vision, and decided to go all in on the digital side. And it's been very, very rewarding. So from there, worked at Husker Vision, both as an undergrad and then post-grad for about 5 years. And then got asked by our AD to move over to the digital side. And so I did that for 2 years, just essentially just running our website from a content perspective and trying to herd those sheep. And then after about 2 years, we it was me and Brock essentially, but we took on social media. And then once we took on social media, things just skyrocketed and we grew like crazy. So after 5 years of being on the digital side of Nebraska, we'd gone from Brock and I to a staff. There's about 8 of us, including a couple of student interns that were running our creative and emerging media department with a focus primarily on social media, but also helping out with recruiting assets and stuff like that for the teams. And it was great. Super, super rewarding. Had a lot of fun with it. And then Huddle, I'd been kept my eye on Huddle. Not a lot of people know this, but Huddle is a Nebraska company. The founders were from the University of Nebraska. So when an opportunity came up at Huddle, I had looked at other opportunities there in the past, and none of them had felt right. But this was one on the media side that felt right and made the change. And it's been 2 years now, and that's been great too. So it's just been this constant progression of trying to stay fresh. Obviously, we can get more into this later on, but I do think that there's a challenge for young creatives that I don't think they necessarily realize when they're young creatives, and that's how do you keep your skills sharp? Because you're going to age out at some point. There's always someone younger who was willing to do something cooler for less money than what you are doing. And so at some point, you need to move from the creative side to more of the strategy side, and I've been lucky to be able to navigate that path so far. Fairly well, and it's been super rewarding along the way. But like I said at the beginning, really it's been watching and helping young creatives find their footing in the industries is really what's kept me in it.
Kelly, I think what interests me, like the way you talk about it, you talk like you've just stumbled into all of these things. Like, I know that's not true knowing you, but just how, you know, how have you been able to keep your skill set fresh and like evolve? I mean, it's not like these things have just happened to you, right? How have you gone out of your way to make sure that you're ahead of the curve and knowing what's going to come next and be a part of that?
I mean, I've always, not just in my profession, but just in life in general, you know, there's a lot of luck involved with everything, right? Like luck with where you're, what part of the country you're born in, all that sort of stuff. All that stuff kind of defines who you end up becoming and the choices you make in your life. So I do tend to talk more about stumbling into it because there are days I feel like I have kind of stumbled into it. But for sure, I have definitely focused down on the technology side of it, you know, watching how that stuff progresses, the changes that come from the technology. I've also, and something that I feel very strongly about, I really think what defines innovation is taking two ideas that are not obviously connected and putting them together. And I think for a lot of people, particularly in the sports field, but I think this applies to pretty much every industry, if you are a sports fan, it might be hard to see outside of sports because all you know is sports and all you watch is sports and all you consume is sports. I am, like I said, I'm not a huge sports fan. I should kind of qualify that. I wasn't growing up. I watch a lot of sports now, partially because it's my profession, but I do genuinely enjoy it too. But as I've grown up, when I want something to get a break from the job or just something to relax and unwind with, I'm not turning on a football game. I'm probably turning on a movie or something like that. So I think the other aspect of it is I have been in an industry that I enjoy and it's something that I am passionate about, but it is not the only thing I'm passionate about. And I think that has given me some perspective outside of the industry to see where things are moving on a whole that if I were just focused just inside of the sports industry, I may not have been able to see. And one of the things that I always think back on, early days of social media, when you look at Twitter and it was just text posting, I've been in it that long where I can remember when they allowed you to start uploading pictures to Twitter. I remember very clearly the first year they allowed GIFs to be uploaded into Twitter. And this was a big deal at the time because you could do photos, but you couldn't do any video or anything moving. And they were going to allow GIFs. And there were about three colleges across the country that realized, hey, we could take essentially headshots that we do on big screens and we can move those to Twitter in GIF form. And it was Nebraska, Miami, and I can't remember the third off the top of my head, but there were about three of us that were, might have been Clemson, that were in really, really early on it on that very first week, because we knew we had this experience that, hey, we also had worked in big screens. We could just apply this to this industry. It may not seem like it fits perfectly, but we could just move this over here. And by week two, the entire country was doing it. It did not take long for it to catch on because it was such an obvious thing. But being able to see outside of that one silo you're in is something that I have really tried to keep a focus on. And I think that's really what's helped me along the way.
I think what's impressed me about you and a big thing that I've taken from you with you being, you mentioned earlier, Kelly is my first boss in the industry. Kelly, much like JP, was the reason I worked at Husker Vision. He gave me a tour when I was a senior in high school. Our small towns are like 10 miles away from each other. So he gave my tiny high school senior class a tour of Husker Vision. And I was like, I'm absolutely 100% in. I applied like the next day and begged for a job. And I'm pretty sure I got that job because of Kelly. So thank you. But one of the things I was always impressed about was how willing and not afraid you were to take on a project that was probably out of our scope at the time or out of anybody's scope in the industry. But you always find a way to pull it off in some way, shape or form. Where does that mentality come from? And then B, what do you think is the biggest project that you've kind of went in all in on, not totally knowing what the end result was going to be?
Yeah, for sure. I think part of it is I'm just a little bit of a masochist in that I like challenging myself. And it doesn't scare me to do hard things. I think some of that just comes from being a farm kid. You know, it was summertime, got to wake up before it gets too hot so you can go haul, you know, a bunch of pipe that each piece weighs a fairly significant amount and it just sucks, but you got to get it done. And so I've really taken that on from my dad, just this idea that you got to be self-sufficient, you got to go do it. And I think the other part of it is there's something in my brain that's a little broken, that there's not much that I see that I see and I go, well, I couldn't do that. I try to do things that are well outside of my scope of expertise. For a while, I was trying to figure out how to draw so I could do those really cool illustration things. This was back when I was doing more recruiting content. I was not good at it, and I gave up on it pretty quickly, but I still gave it an effort. And I probably could have gotten better if I had stuck with it. But that's part of what's a little broken in my brain is just I see things and I'm like, I can do that. I can make something like that. And I try and I usually fail. But in failing, you're learning and you're growing and you're figuring out how to use new things. When you first start as a creative, you kind of find your field. Maybe it's animation, maybe it's graphic design, maybe it's photography, maybe it's videography. What they don't tell you is that they're all really the same thing. You're using the same skills across all of those. And so that sort of cross-disciplinary work helps grow the skills. I like to tell people that when I finally figured out how to be a decent videographer is when I started figuring out how to be a photographer, because it taught me about lenses and how to use light. Don't be afraid to push yourself in that way, and you're going to fail, and that's fine. To your second question about what's probably the largest project, there's been a couple social media campaigns that we've gotten into the middle of that I've really, really regretted getting into. One we did years ago was a social media campaign in the summer where we were trying to find the best Husker memorabilia, and we had people submit their favorite memorabilia, and we put it in a bracket and ranked them and had people vote on them. And it was a lot. And dealing with people that are passionate about their things and they want to try to win things, it got to be hard. That wasn't necessarily a creative project that I got over my skis on, but it was definitely one. I also remember early on in my career, like I was probably a second year Husker Vision student. So I would have been a junior in college. And I was given the introduction for the men's basketball team. And I had this phenomenal idea where I was going to rotoscope out a guy dunking, and I was going to fill it in. And it was going to look like that kind of animated style where it wasn't going to be the player. It was going to be just like a silhouette dunking. And it got to be about 36 hours before tip-off, and I had about 2 seconds of it done. And I realized I was not going to be able to get this done, and I had to go get help. And that was a very, very humbling experience to go get help from my boss and tell him that I completely screwed that one up. But we got it done. We figured out, we got something done. And so I think stuff like that also teaches you that it's okay to shoot big and dream big on what you want to get accomplished on a project. But there's always a voice in the back of your head that should be a little bit of a ticking time bomb that says, okay, we have this amount of time before our deadline. This is what we wanted to get done. We should be this far along by that point in time. This is where we're actually at. How do I need to adjust to make sure I can still hit my deadline? And that process with that men's basketball introduction really, really taught me how to be better about time management and figuring out how to at least get something done, even if you're not what you originally imagined it being.
I think, you know, I would assume that a lot of our listeners I think they have a general idea of what Huddle does, right? It's game film, right? At the very core. I don't think a ton of people realize the amount of content that Huddle makes and that Huddle Studios is a division within Huddle that creates a lot of this content. Can you kind of walk through what your world is now? You know, maybe where it was before you that were there, and where it's at now, and what kind of content you guys are strategizing and putting out.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. It's something we deal with a lot in the industry. So Huddle is a software company. It was envisioned as essentially a digital playbook back in the day, where you could attach video to your playbook as a way to teach your athletes how to learn plays. The one thing that they really figured out early on was that by moving the system into the cloud, they could scale pretty rapidly. And so what ended up happening was, I'm assuming a lot of your listeners, if not all of your listeners, are in the collegiate and professional space. Almost all of your teams are using something like an Exos product, where your video team has their own servers on hand. So all of that content is local within your organization. And there's security reasons why teams do that, especially at the collegiate and professional level. But it's very cost prohibitive, especially for high schools, to be able to do that. There are some services that, do that, but most high school programs cannot have a video director on staff, and so it's just hard for them to do. So what Huddle figured out is if they moved all that stuff to the cloud, they could remove kind of that technical expense for high schools, and they could scale essentially something like an Exos out to the high school market. And so they figured that really early on. We were one of Amazon Web Services, AWS is our, handles most of our traffic. We were one of their first clients, and we have a really deep and long relationship with them. And when they did that, that unlocked this high school market to a point where now Huddle, we are still very, very, very prevalent in high school, but I would guarantee that for people listening, most of your guys' organizations probably also work with us too, even if you don't realize it. We have software products now that run the gamut. So we could be in Bruning Davenport, where I went to high school, with a graduation population every year. Each class is about 30 people, maybe less now. All the way up to Manchester United is a client of ours. Barcelona, almost every NBA team uses one of our products. So we have a number of products now that kind of run that gamut. One of the fun things about being on the team I'm on is that doesn't really mean anything for what we're doing. We're kind of a separate division with inside of Huddle. That's a little strong, but is sort of the reality. Huddle also figured out pretty early on that if you give high school athletes the ability to create their own reels, their own recruiting reels, they could somewhat democratize the recruiting process. So whereas 20 years ago, getting recruited was really reliant on you being seen, physically seen by a coach, usually in a camp or something like that, Huddle made it possible for you to take all of your game film, put it online, give yourself a landing page where you can house all that content, and then coaches can search through that and find it for you, really, really democratizing that whole process. The other thing we found out is there are a lot of people that are interested in high school sports and in watching high school sports video. And so that led to the creation of the media team, which is what I'm on. We're the youngest unit within Huddle. We're really only about 3 years old, and I've been there for two of those 3 years. And our goal is essentially to create a media platform for Huddle based around what we call competitive, what most people would call high school, U.S. high school sports. To create this ecosystem of content and sharing of that content. So if you are a high school athlete in the United States, there's a good chance that your team uses Huddle. If they do, you have a profile on our page. You can log on to an app. You have your own profile. You can create your own content. Essentially, there's this light social media element built into Huddle where all of these high school athletes can interact with each other, follow each other, share video back and forth with each other. And then for a lot of them, they're creating that content to get recruited. And then Huddle Studios, which is my little slice of the Huddle media world, we're then charged with creating content for that audience. And then also to create some opportunities for another revenue stream for Huddle outside of team subscriptions. So working with brands like Gatorade. Gatorade has a really cool product that we call our highlight themes, where athletes can use Gatorade branded graphics on their highlights packages. So things like spots, shadows, and lower thirds can have a Gatorade branding on it. But those are the sorts of deals that we work with then, finding ways to get brands to engage with these high school athletes to help them get high school athletes, them get noticed outside of that. And so from the media team's perspective, from the Huddle Studios perspective, we're creating a lot of content. And a lot of that content exists just inside of Huddle. But we also run our flagship social channels and have done some work just within the last 18 months or so, trying to really level those up across Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what we're doing are things like our longest standing franchise is one that we call Top Five, which is exactly what it sounds like. We take a look at all of high school sports in a given week, and we find the top most interesting plays from that week. A fairly daunting task when you realize that there are 7,000 high school football games every Friday night across the United States. But we've gotten pretty good at identifying those top plays across multiple sports too. And so that's Top Five. We also have some more high polish content we do. We think of Top Five as what we call our curated content, where we're using content that is being captured by the teams. But we also have a video production staff that can go out in the field when we can go out in the field and not locked at home, and produce content too. So we've have a show that we call Contenders is a pretty good example of that, where the team will find the two top ranked football athletes that are facing off against each other on Friday nights and kind of do a behind the scenes documentary style featured show about that. We've run three seasons of that so far, hoping for the fourth, but who knows what this fall is going to look like across the sports world. And that's what we do. Just a wide range of content, but really with a focus on sports, not just as an entertainment venue, but really sports and for the love of the game and the love of competition. So where a lot of companies have gotten into the high school space within the last few years, they're usually focusing on it more as an entertainment aspect, hence all the Bronny James coverage. We love Bronny. He plays at Sierra Canyon, which is a client of ours, and they're a great client of ours too. But Bronny is one athlete of the millions of athletes that we have on the platform. So we want to make sure that we're helping those athletes get better at their game and really inspire them to do so.
I just want to say Contenders is a fantastic show. If you haven't seen it, you should go watch the past seasons that are out there.
I agree.
I really appreciate that. I've had almost nothing to do with it. That was existing before I came. So I take absolutely zero credit for that.
I give all the credit to Matt and Alex. So yeah,
but the team does a great job with it. And it is a great, great show.
So Kelly, I think one of the things that's interesting when you brought up, your curated content, that curated content is kind of where everybody is living right now. And I assume that is a big part of what you guys do on a day-to-day basis, because you are just have so much content that's generated for you that you're taking and turning into content. So can you shed some light into how you think about your curated content and developing different platforms to be able to create new franchises from that content?
You're spot on. Another aspect to that too, is that a lot of the people who are administrating these team accounts within Huddle are usually coaches, because again, this is high school. They don't have video directors there. Most of them don't, at least. So coaches really, to be quite frank, don't give a crap about highlight reels. They're there to use Huddle as a coaching tool. So we try to find ways to help them do that, because we also realize that there's a value for them in promoting their teams. And one of the ways we do that, we have an auto generation platform inside of Huddle, so that as soon as we have video on the platform, and then we also have game data on the platform — you got to remember, this is high school, not college, where you're getting games live statted as the game goes on. But once we get those stats in there too, we can connect the stats to the video, and then we can auto-generate game highlights from that. So a 2.5 to 3 minute highlight that's completely automated, completely generated by a computer system. No human intervention done at all. All of those sorts of internal systems are why it's really, really exciting to be a media guy that works for a technology company. Because like I said, there are 7,000 high school football games on a Friday night. I've done the back of the napkin math on that. That's about 500,000 plays each week. So try to get from 500,000 plays down to realistically, we usually focus in on about 60 plays a week that we really focus on. That is not an insignificant task. And so we do a lot of work within the platform to do that. And then we also do some work within social media and just paying attention, listening, searching, finding stuff that's trending that way to really find and discover those plays. I think your question was more around everybody is doing curated content now, and you're spot on. We recognized pretty early on that I don't want to say it was an opportunity, but that we were already somewhat skilled as a team in how to use the sorts of production methods. So we jumped into doing remote production pretty quickly within the team. We have a series that we've been doing for a little over a year now that we call Film Room, where we take an athlete and it's just what it sounds like. They break down their film, or perhaps it's a coach that does it. We've done it with a lot of professional athletes too, looking back at their high school film, which is always fun to do too. But we had been doing those in person a year ago. We realized pretty quickly we weren't going to be able to do those in person now. So we shifted to doing them on Zoom calls. And since we, again, are a technology company, Huddle is built for remote teaching. It was really, really easy to use Huddle as a tool to also do these film rooms with coaches and athletes and have them break down film within the tool. And then we could record those Zoom calls and produce them that way to get rolling pretty quickly on that. It's obviously not rocket science. There are a lot of people, I would guess most of the people listening to this, that are doing similar things right now, listening to, you know, using Zoom as a tool to conduct interviews and creating shows based off of it. But it's something we've been doing for a while. We've been trying to figure out ways to scale out content remotely for a while, just because of how broad and vast high school sports is. There are definitely downsides to it. But the nice thing about the current situation is, since everybody's doing it, I think everyone's quality filter has gone down a little bit and everyone's a little bit more used to seeing Zoom calls show up on TV. And it's something we leaned into pretty early on.
I think a lot of people around the industry look to you as one of the leaders in this space, whether it was from social to content strategy. You've always done really well to kind of read the tea leaves and see where things are going and adapt as things come. After this current situation, where do you see content going in the next year and then 5 years out? How do you see things changing and shifting in this landscape?
I think sports will come back before fans do. And I think that's not a super deep statement to make right now. So what that means is, though, apply to what we do. That means what we do is going to be even more important because fans are not going to have that close in stadium connection with their teams. And they're going to be looking for ways to connect to those teams. The good news is there's been a lot of growth in that area on social media within the last 3 or 4 years. And there are a lot of really, really good examples of how to do that now, even in an environment where fans are at stadiums and participating in games. So I think there's a lot that we can already lean on. But I do think that it's going to become even more important. This idea of a second screen viewing experience is going to be more and more important. I know from my perspective, when I was on the team side of things, you kind of forget that there's a world outside of your stadium when you're working a game, because it feels like everything that is important in life is happening within that one stadium. But once I moved into social media, and especially once I moved myself off of the field and moved myself into an office during the game, I very quickly realized that the audience inside the venue is a lot smaller than the audience outside of the venue. And that's, again, it's obvious, but it's very easy to forget when, you know, you're in the middle of a game. I think that push is going to become even more important now. And so finding ways to connect the audience to the game, the deep parts of the game, in the sidelines, in the locker rooms, is going to become even more important now.
One of the things that you touched on earlier that we've touched on a little bit in the first couple episodes is this idea of having a jack of all trades mindset when you're in sports, when you're working for, you know, Husker Vision type program. And the way that you've built your skill set and what you've talked about with video, you know, when you became a better videographer, you also became a better photographer, and how all that blends together like a cross-training mindset. As someone who is fairly young in the industry, it's being amplified a little bit now too with working from home. Having that versatile skill set seems to be more and more important. And so how have you cultivated that, and what do you see as the most important aspect of continuing to build your skill set in different ways?
I really think it's just, it's about being curious. It's about being curious about the other side of the coin. I kind of go back and forth on it. I don't know that there is like a perfect creative, a creative that is perfectly tuned to do all of the things. But I think any creative can dabble in other areas too. So probably the closest connection is really photography and videography. You're using cameras anymore. A video camera and a still camera are the same thing. So getting comfortable with the camera is the most important thing there. But elements of design, learning how typography hierarchies and color balances and stuff like that work within a design perspective will make your photography or videography eye a lot better. It'll help with your composition and framing skills.
And also your compensation.
And your compensation as well. That's true. So I'm not sure I have a great answer for how to cultivate that other than you just need to be curious. If you're in this field, it probably means you have a good eye to begin with, but it doesn't mean you have a great eye. So seek out good art, seek out good movies, seek out good TV shows. Like, I'm not going to lie, I love Tiger King. Tiger King is one of my favorite things in the last 3 months, but it's not like I'm getting a lot of creative inspiration from Tiger King. But I am getting a lot of creative inspiration from films like Knives Out or Ad Astra or any of the other. We're in a really great time period for films. All of that sort of stuff, watching how those compositions are framed, how those stories are developed and told, all of that can be applied to sports. It's just about thinking about the methods and the skills that they're developing to do that. From a leadership side, as someone who has built teams in the past, for me, it's I always have tried to hire well. And what I mean by that is to hire someone who's curious and wants to get better more than someone who's already skilled at something. Especially when I'm hiring young students, I kind of get a red flag when someone comes in and says they know everything. Because what that tells me is they're not curious, that they've found what they know. They might be pretty good at what they know, but they don't know what they don't know yet. And that means it's going to take some time to break them, for lack of a better term, to get them to realize that there's a wider world outside of what they know. So I have always tried to hire well, to hire curious people, and not to be quite as concerned as what their skill sets are. Obviously, on a team that you need to have graphic designers and videographers and editors and producers all working together, you need to have some of those, some balance of those. But really, the individual skill sets matter less than how curious they are, and then push them into areas that they're probably not comfortable with. When we were in the early days of our creative and emerging media department, there's a lot of sports at colleges, and there are not a lot of employees in these departments. And so I was asking our graphic designer to run the social media account for our volleyball team. And if you know anything about Nebraska, you know, we have a really, really good volleyball team. That's a fairly high profile job for someone that doesn't know, quote, social media, and is instead a graphic designer. But by putting that graphic designer in that environment, that teaches them how people are actually consuming that content, and then how those designs that they're creating, how it works and reacts in that social environment. So then it makes their graphic design chops better, because they now understand how that content is being consumed. So really pushing yourself to have a holistic view of content, all the way from ideation to creation to distribution, and which is one that a lot of creatives forget about. Like, it doesn't matter if people aren't seeing. It doesn't matter if you're making cool stuff if nobody sees it. Like, that distribution part's pretty important too. And then the evaluation and how you decide whether or not it's successful or not. I think every creator should be doing every piece of that at some point, and because it'll make their craft a lot better too.
Kelly, I think the one thing that you know, I'm interested in, like, this is all great about, like, I just love hearing how your mind works strategically and all that. And you talked earlier about, like, you know, mid-career at some point you have to make that switch from being the actual content creator to, you know, more of a strategy role. How do you do that? I mean, what does it take to both get that opportunity and then to kind of change how your brain works going from creator to strategy?
Yeah, it's not easy. One of the ways that, again, not to put too much on the luck side of it, one of the ways that I lucked into it is early on in my career, I was tasked with hiring our interns at Husker Vision. So that meant right away, I had to go find and hire and administrate this whole intern program within the athletic department. If you are a young creator, I would push to mentor a younger creator. Find an intern that is interested in what you're doing and mentor them, help them get better, and make sure you are also using them to help you get better, because that's how you learn to develop that part of your brain on how to critique things. There is a skill in providing good criticism on creative content to make it better. A lot of people will provide criticism on content, not to make it better, but just to criticize it. But there is a little bit of skill in threading that needle on how to get a person to make something better. So look for those opportunities to mentor people. It doesn't even necessarily have to be direct management. I know sometimes we get stuck on this idea that if you're not a manager of an employee, you're not actually managing someone, but that's just not true. As a creative, you are probably interacting with a lot of people on your team that you are a leader for. So be a leader. If you are directing, even if you aren't managing someone, if you're directing a big screen show or a TV show or even a web show, provide feedback. Don't just yell at them. I mean, yell at them too, because that's part of the fun of directing. But also pull them to the side later on and tell them why you were yelling at them and how to get better at it and to really work that part of your brain too. That's how you start figuring out how to go from the creator side to the strategy. For me, I always saw... and I'm not talking about anyone specifically, because I've seen it in every job I've had, and even in jobs I haven't had. Looking at other places, it is very, very easy to get into this idea that, hey, I'm an editor, I'm going to be an editor forever, or I'm a graphic designer, and I'm going to be a graphic designer forever. And then you stop using that mentorship side of your brain, and then it's natural. As we get older, we start slowing down. We can't think as fast. I'm talking like I'm 65 years old here, and I'm not even 40, but it's true. I've noticed it myself, where time moves at a completely different pace for me now than it did, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. You start having kids, it's harder to invest and direct your energy at a project for hours on end to get something done that you need to really focus on. So all of that stuff just kind of builds up, and you get to be less cool because you just get old. And so you just lose track of trends and what's going on in the cool art scene at the time. And all of that just compounds to making you a less effective creator. And so you really need to build that mentorship side of your brain.
I 100% agree with you on the kids aspect. And I guess the best way to put it is, When all these athletes, they call it the prime of their career, right? And then on the backside, you hear all these athletes talking about how they have to be smarter than the athletes to keep up and continue to push the limits. So how do you go about staying up on technology and what's going on in the field when you can actually do less of it and your hand's not in it as much in the day-to-day?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. And that's another one that I've gotten in job interviews a number of times, and it's kind of hard to explain because it just seems like so natural. It's just what I do. But it's about how you, the types of content you're consuming and pushing yourself to be consuming quote unquote young content. It's kind of fun now that my oldest son he's just turned into a teenager, which is wild to think about, but he's starting to get into media now and starting to have opinions about shows and music and stuff like that. So it's been cool to see that because it gives me a little bit of an insight into what that generation is watching and looking into. But one of the other ways that I've always gone about it is don't be afraid to jump into new platforms. I've been on TikTok for a long time. I don't create TikToks. That would be really, really awful. Nobody would want to see that. But I do consume a lot of TikToks. One, because they're hilariously weird. And two, because it's just a way to kind of stay fresh and current on trends and memes. But having an awareness on what's driving culture is really important. And so making good choices on how you are following culture, making sure that you're attuned to types of media publications that are also attuned to what's going on with culture. I just read an article the other day about how, speaking of TikTok, about how musicians are actually changing the titles of their songs based on the snippets that go viral on TikTok. Because there's a discovery problem where people hear stuff on TikTok and they can't figure out what the song is on Spotify. So because the name doesn't match what they're hearing on TikTok. That's a super, super smart play from a business perspective. But we need to be, as creators, we need to be that smart too and be thinking about, okay, this is a really cool thing that I've seen or I hear a lot of people talking about this. Where is that coming from? Where did that start? Like, where did that originate from? And then figure out where it came from and then just immerse yourself in the culture of that platform because that's how you're going to figure out, you know, what the kids are doing, as they say. And I am by no means what I would consider a Gen Z expert, but I do like to keep my ear to the ground and I do like to think of myself as being younger than my age.
Wow, this was fantastic. We could probably go on for hours because you are providing some absolute gold on every single one of these answers and inspiration and just the way to think about how you're going about creating content and building out content with strategy and all of that. So thank you so much, Kelly. You appreciate your time.
Absolutely. No, this has been fun.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.